The Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Welcome to Desert Island Discs. Every single Sunday, we hear stories from people who, and I hate to say it, but made it in life. You know, because that can be relative. Success is quite relative. But by and large, have lessons that they've learned and they can actually share with us. My name is Flavia, and if you've missed any of the shows in the past, we have Capital FM Uganda on anywhere you get podcasts, and you can catch up. Today, my guest is the Executive Director for Uganda Community-Based Association for Women and Children Welfare. Sounds like something very important because you have two groups, children
and women.
Oh, yes. And now you have my interest. Welcome to Miss Frances Birungi Odong. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Flavia.
Welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you.
You're about to be cast away. Thrown away somewhere.
I'm excited, yes.
And I want to know your story. Let's go back in your childhood. Let's start somewhere.
I was born in Kenya. I'm Ugandan though.
Okay.
But I was born in Kenya. Around 1977, around there, my parents left the country.
Okay.
That was, I think, the time of Idi Amin. And it didn't help that my father was a very politically charged person. As a person at university, was very politically...
They'd call him defiant today.
Yes. So he was that kind of person. Yeah. So, and then when he finished university, he moved to Jinja with my mom. I think they met when they were in university.
Okay.
And they were both teaching in Jinja. And at that time, he continued, you know, still having his political activism and calling out everything that was not going right at the time. Mm. So what happened is that I'm told at some point it was a social gathering and they were having a drink. And he made a comment about how the soldiers of Idi Amin were not educated, barbaric. I mean, that's not something you'd say at the time. So that
I wasn't there that time, but even I know that wasn't
that is not something you'd say. Yes, so he was picked up at home. He was taken to Magamaga prison, or it was a barracks at the time. And
they didn't have children at the time.
They didn't have what?
They didn't have children at the time.
They had two children at the time with my mom, our first and second born. I wasn't born at that time. So he was tortured. He was tortured properly. So when he came out, he was warned that there are orders for him to be arrested. It was really a problem person, like people who talk, they don't keep quiet.
Yeah.
So they told him that they will pick him up and there were arrangements for, I think, for him to be killed or something.
Right.
So he arranged with my mother to leave the country. So they left the country. They were exiled in Kenya and lived in Kakamega. Luckily enough, at the time, teachers from Uganda were very marketable It was very easy for them to get something to survive, you know, to get jobs to do. So both of them started teaching.
Okay. What were they teaching?
They were teaching in secondary school. Okay. My father was teaching economics. Okay. My mother, I'm not sure, but I know she was teaching. Yeah. My father was really doing very well as a teacher. He was actually promoted to become a headmaster in another school that was better than Kakamega secondary school, which was Maseno in Kisumu. So within that time, the rest of us were born. So we are a family of seven. So two were born in Uganda.
You're the third and then
the fourth.
Others. You're the fourth.
Yes, I'm the fourth. So they had another child, then myself and others. So I was born in 1979 in a missionary hospital. My parents were really struggling. It was difficult. Exile life is not very easy. You've left everything behind.
You've left home. You've left what, familiar?
You have children and all that. But, you know, they were teachers. At least they had something to put food on the table. In 1980... Amin was overthrown, and that was Obote time. Obote came in and he organized elections. And my father, of course, still having the politics in
you
him.
You mean the streak didn't move? It stayed with him.
The political spirit didn't move. So we came back at that point. So he stood to become a member of parliament at the time under the DP ticket. Right. And at that time, I was the baby. My mother moved with him as the campaign manager. So
they were just
this young couple that was really very motivated and so politically charged. So they were moving with me as a baby. And I'm told that the first words that I said were DP. Because, you know, as had children say mama or
you
papa,
chose to say
I said DP.
Oh, because that's what
because
you were around.
Yes, my father was standing.
You were in the middle of a
DP
campaign.
I was in the middle of a campaign. And everything I was hearing was DP. So
you thought
that
it's
was
someone's
my first
name.
I don't know what I thought, but those were the first so things. Sweet. And it was probably easy, just two letters, DP.
You won?
Sorry, no. Unfortunately, he didn't make it.
Oh, no.
And we had to leave. Yeah, so we got back to Kenya.
So the only reason you had actually returned was to vie for the position.
Position of being a member of parliament. So they went back and continued teaching. Mm-hmm. But at that time, they heard that there was a group of young people that were not happy about what had happened in those elections in 1980 and Obote, and they had gone to the bush to organize. They were a rebel group that was going to...
Which most likely is the current.
That is the current. So he got in touch because he was also not satisfied with what had happened because he had lost in the election. He was on the DP
ticket.
You mean
this whole thing of saying the elections were not fair came from back in the
Yes, it came from back.
People were always complaining.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So he linked up with them. Mm-hmm. So his role and my mother was kind of working
with
him.
So mommy was... going with the flow, what he wanted, she supported.
Yes, and they were both, they had similar interests. They're both teachers, they are both political people.
So she wasn't really just a supportive wife. She also had her own
real deep interests. Yes, yes. So they kind of aligned very well in that sense. They continued with the struggle until 1986 when the NRM government overtook power. So we came back at that point.
Okay.
When we came back, of course, they were very actively involved in politics. We're living in Jinja still. My father was appointed as, at that time they used to call them district administrators. These days they are the resident RDC.
RDC,
yes.
District commissioners.
From there we moved to Tororo. He was also RDC of Tororo. So we basically, as a family, it was
wherever his interest took them.
That's now the bad side of being in politics. You're moving, you know, you're not steady. Even schools are changing and all that. Later he got into he stood again to become a member of parliament. This time he was successful.
Let's kill the suspense for those listening who are saying, but who's her dad? I was in Tororo. What's dad's name?
Yes, my father is he's passed on. He's Honorable Fred Mukisa. And my mother, I don't know if I'll tell my mother's story, but my mother is Solome Mukisa.
Solome Mukisa. Yes. So he won.
He won this time and he got into politics and he was a member of parliament for a very long time and later became a minister in charge of agriculture, serving in the government. On my mother's side, when she came back, she was also into politics. She was an NRM cadre and her role was to mobilize women to be part of the government, to support the government, to, you know, to take on government programs.
Yes.
So she was really an NRM cadre mobilizer. And at some point she was appointed as the Secretary of Women Affairs at the NRM Secretariat. So she was really managing women affairs.
Wow.
For me, in terms of school, when we came back, I was taken to a boarding school called Nsuwe Boarding Primary School. My parents were very busy. That's now the other side.
Clearly.
From primary 1 to primary 7, it was very difficult. Remember, I was a child who only knew Swahili. But later when I learned the languages, it became better. I finished my 7 years. Mm. From there, I moved to, for the secondary part, I went to Tororo Girls School.
Ah.
So from there, I moved to HSC secondary. I went to Green Hill Academy.
Ah.
So I was there for 2 years, from S5 to S6. And by that time, I think my dream, because of what I had grown seeing, I really felt that I needed, what I wanted to be was to be a lawyer. Nothing else than me.
You say you're 7 children.
Yes.
We can be blinded to just see your side of the story. What about your other siblings?
Yeah.
Did they see it from your point of view as well? Was everybody going with the flow of the family wherever it went?
Not everybody. We have a group that is into politics, then some are into business, you know. Everyone chooses.
I wanted
to be into leadership, but a political leader. But now the thing is, from primary school, because I had that in me, I stood to be a prefect in
primary. Okay.
But I didn't make it.
No.
And I was like, what are people not seeing? Okay, maybe next time. I went to secondary school, I stood again to be a prefect.
Don't tell
Guess
me this.
What?
No.
I didn't make it.
No, come
I
on.
I did not.
You did not rally these votes.
What happened?
Oh, my word.
So I was like, hey, but I was like, well, let's see what happens someday.
Yeah.
So,
what's your first song choice before we continue?
But okay, my first song is God Will Make a Way.
God
Will Make a Way. I think for me, I choose that song because when I hear my parents talk about the struggles that they went through politically and everything, it could have taken any, you know, any direction.
You could have lost
your dad. Don't know where it would have gone. Death, the struggles, we don't know. So for me, I feel that we are where we are, or we are who we are because of God. So God will make a way.
Wow, beautiful. Yeah.
God will make a way where there seems to be no way. He works in ways we cannot see. He will make a way for me. He will be my guide. Hold me closely to His side. With love and strength for each new day, He will make a way. He will make a way. Oh, God will make a way where there seems to be no way. He works in ways we cannot see. He will make a way for me. He will be my guide. Hold me closely to His side. With love and strength for each new day, He will make a way. He will make a way. By a roadway in the wilderness, He'll lead me. Rivers in the desert, He will make a way for me. He will be my guide. Hold me closely to His side.
Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs. I have Miss Frances Birungi-Odong, who's the Executive Director, Uganda Community-Based Association for Women and Children Welfare. And the first part of the story was her giving us that story of, you know, being a child around a politically charged couple. You know, your mom and dad being in the middle of a struggle, but also wanting to make an impact and the kind of effect that it has on you.
Yeah.
You wanted to be a lawyer. Okay, you wanted to be a leader, a political leader. You wanted to be or touch politics just like dad had done it.
Yeah.
But here you are, and nobody's allowing you to take leadership positions in school.
Yes.
What happened? You didn't lose hope?
I didn't lose hope. Okay. So I go to university and like I said, I wanted to be a lawyer to study law.
Yes.
So when I did my exams senior six, lucky enough in that cohort, I emerged as the best student.
Fantastic.
In that cohort. And I was given government sponsorship to do social sciences. Mm-hmm. So it was exciting that I've got, I was the best in the school. Yeah. I've got government sponsorship. But the course,
it's social science.
Social sciences. No, me, I'm
a lawyer.
To be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. So I went and talked to my parents about this. And like, you know, there's a good side of all this. I've made it. I did well. I've been given this place on government sponsorship. But
my dream is somewhere
else. My dream is something else. I want to be a lawyer. So what I remember is my father looked at me and said, the government of Uganda is going to pay your school fees. And you're here telling me
your dreams, that and,
your
passions.
Dreams and passions.
I like it.
So he
He's
was
one
like,
of those old school parents. Yes. Like, what are you saying?
Like, what are you talking about? So he said, no. I mean, you're going to do social sciences. I was like, well, let me do it.
Yeah.
In university, I stood again. I tried my luck at leadership. No giving up.
I'm crossing my fingers here. What happened?
So, I stood to be a women leader in the guild.
Yeah.
And I made it. So, for the first time, I was like, oh, okay. So, it's not like, because at some point I had started thinking, maybe actually it's not a calling, it's not my thing, you know.
And had you told dad or mom about
your ambitions? Yes, and they were very supportive. Okay. Yes, yes. So I got in there, I served my term at university and also did my social sciences. Mm. I graduated. Actually, by the end of the course, three years, it wasn't as bad as I thought. Mm. I felt, actually, this is a good thing. I think this is something I can do.
Okay.
This is something that can change lives. It kind of helped me to kind of change the way I saw life. Like, life is beyond just being a political leader. Right. Or you can serve as
you
a leader.
You can be a lot anywhere.
Anywhere else and in different fields. So, true. So basically, that's how...
That was a shift.
That's how the shift happened. But generally, as a child, my mother says that as a child, one thing that she saw about me is that I was always in charge. Among all these children, there were older children, not just the three that came before me, but also my father had so many other children. But at home, and we all grew up together at home. Oh. But my mother says I was always organizing the kids, always bringing opinions, always wanting to be in the lead and, you know, taking action and very organized. She says I was that kind of child that always never lost my stuff at school,
organized.
Always packed my things. I was very organized. So when she says that, I see bits of it in my later life, but that's how she describes me as a child.
From outside looking in.
Yes.
I always say, when people ask, oh, as an only child, wouldn't you have wanted siblings?
Yeah.
I said, I don't know. I can't, because I don't know that life.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I also look at it as, don't you fight to be heard when you have siblings? It might be selfish to ask, but I mean, look at you saying that we're a big family.
Yeah.
And even maybe perhaps you're needing to take charge of sort to be, to let's lead this. Mm-hmm. Because isn't it hard to be seen and heard when you're many?
Yes, I think it is. I think there is that struggle. I think in a way, it's not something that is talked about or is seen, but as people that are in that setting, you're always trying to stand out, to be heard, to be felt, to be... So there is some kind of struggle in there. It's silent, but it's... And it doesn't have to be a harmful kind of struggle. It is a peaceful kind of struggle, but it's in there.
It's there.
We were 18. Yeah. So, of course, others had passed on. So we were more than 18 children together. Mm. But not all of us have made it in life. So that means others are doing very well. Others are... struggling, others are, you know, we are all in our different spaces doing our stuff. But I think it all comes from, you know, how as a person did you manage to stand out?
To handle it. So social sciences wasn't as bad as you thought.
No, it wasn't.
And you graduated.
I was very happy with what I did. Mm. Actually, beyond that, I thought, now, do I really have to do what my father said, that I should, you know, go back and do law?
The law that you wanted.
No, I was like, no, I don't even feel it anymore.
Okay.
I think let me do something else. I did a master's in human rights, maybe close to law.
It. It's still people.
Yes, still people. And yes, that is basically what defines my life today. I work on human rights issues. I work with people. I do social work, and I love it. I think, like I said, God will make a way. God
indeed.
Just knew what my destiny was, and it is
and,
what it
and
is.
Formed it.
Of course, I hear so many people ask, "How can you not be a politician with that history with
you know?
Your parents?" I am a leader, but in a different way.
Which is more important, anyway, to be a leader than a politician?
Yes.
What's your second song choice?
So my second choice is Dance With My Father.
Oh, the late leader.
I love that song because it reminds me of my dad. Like I said, we were very many kids. But also my father, he was not there all the time because he was busy with work. He had a political assignment and that. And then later in life, he got cancer. And unfortunately, he passed on. And every time that song plays, I think about my father. Mm. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to dance with him on my wedding. But every time the song plays, I just think about my father and everything that he did to, you know, for this family and for the people that he served and his contributions to the country. So he was a father beyond just me, but to the country,
many.
To many and so forth. So Dance With My Father, and I dedicate it to my father.
It's a beautiful choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back when I was a child, before life removed all the innocence, my father would lift me high and dance with my mother and me, and then spin me around till I fell asleep. Then
downstairs he would carry me, and I knew for sure I was loved. If I could get another chance, another walk, another dance with him, I'd play a song that would never, ever end. How I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again. When I and my mother would disagree, to get my way I would run from her to him. He'd make me laugh just to comfort me. Then finally make me do just what my mama said. Later that night when I was asleep, he left a dollar under my sheet. Never dreamed that he would be gone from me. If I could steal one final glance, one final final dance with him, I'd play a song that would never, ever end. 'Cause I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again. Sometimes I'd listen outside her door, and I'd hear how my mother cried for him. Pray for her even more than me. I pray for her even more than me.
Desert Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs and Francis Birungi Odong. You know, I don't have my father as well. So that song is something that I actually stopped listening to. It used to really make me sad. I lost mine at the age of 9. And I keep telling people that the memories I have of my father, and he was present, yes, but as time goes on, they sort of fade. For you who had your father for a long time, but also, like you said, he was a father to many. Who you shared with the world. And I say this because I asked a politician's child what it felt like sharing her father with her. And she said, you know, sometimes if they don't appreciate him, I don't like that. Because I'm like, after all, I'm giving you my father anyway. You should be appreciative of all the impact he's doing. Is that how you feel?
Whenever, of course, in his political journey, whenever he lost an election, what is wrong with people? This guy, we are offering this father of ours.
Be grateful.
Be grateful. Yes. Just let him go. And he was a good man. He was really passionate about work, about change, about making sure that people really have, you know, what their rights and all that. So really, I was, as a family, we were ready to share him with the world. We knew that is him. That is his life.
That's what he liked.
I would never be somewhere and say, I'm very mad. My father was never present. He was never there. No, of course he wasn't there, but for a just cause. He was out there doing something very important. He was, you know, serving the country. He was in meetings. He was all that. And the same with my mom. They were all very busy parents. But they did the best that they could to us as children, and we were happy to share them with the world.
Yeah. Also, kudos to how they parented, because you could have taken that a different opinion.
Yeah.
You could have said, how could he not be there?
Yeah, exactly.
But instead, you're like, no, he was doing the right thing.
Yes.
So tell me, human rights. You cared for people enough to study so that you could do something for them.
Yeah.
This was just a general thing. You're just trying to do it. It wasn't something that triggered you, perhaps, to go into human rights. Tell me about now your working, your career of sorts. Now, where do we start to build the career?
First and foremost, the career starts from the story I just told about, you know, seeing my mother and my father being so involved in politics, working with people, fighting for justice and good governance and all those things. But later, when we were in school, primary school and secondary school, my mother was a kind of person who never had domestic workers or caregivers at home. Because we were a big family, there were so many children.
Someone find something to do.
There was always someone doing something. We would come back and some of the kids probably are in boarding school or so. I would have to move with my mom as she went to do her mobilization work in communities. So she...
Oh yeah, because she can't leave you with
she
anyone.
She can't leave us with anyone. There's no one at home. So we were young, P1, P2, P3 and whatever. For me, the motivation, it was fun to just go around with my mom around the country in Barara, whatever it is that she's going to meet women, talk to them about the NRM and how they should be part of these programs and all that. But I like the idea of, you know, traveling and, you know, eating chips and, you
course,
know,
from a child's perspective.
But I didn't realize that there was something that was happening to me at that time. What I remember is that my mom would sit with these women round circle, you know, conversations. I would see her counseling. I would see her talk about empowerment and all that. And I felt, wow, okay, this is something really nice. I think I would love to give back in this way. So she inspired me in that way. And then when I went to senior 4, senior 6, whenever there was a holiday or vacation, my mother would tag me to an NGO to do voluntary work. So I worked with Forum for Women in Democracy in Senior 4 and Senior 6, doing voluntary work and going to the communities. And so you see, my mindset was, you know, being shaped at that time, to really work with women, to work with vulnerable groups and children and support them and encourage them and mentor them and so forth. So I did a lot of voluntary work. So by the time I reached university and made choices on what I want to do, I thought human rights fit very well with the kind of work, because at that point I had clarity on what exactly I wanted to do.
And experience of the service. You had actually been around the community.
From the time I was a child, probably 9 years, 10 years, I was doing community work from that time.
And you didn't even see the point of social sciences?
I didn't.
Because that would fit in perfectly.
Because for me, I thought you had to be a political leader to be, you know, something.
To serve. Is there like I wouldn't call it a trauma, but you know, it's like how counselors or, you know, do therapists take on.
Yeah.
Because you see, if I hear your problem, I can't unhear it.
Yeah.
I take it on.
Yes.
So if I'm lying awake at night, I'm thinking about, oh, I wonder if Francis is okay because of the... So over time, you're carrying about 50, 60 people's issues.
Mm.
Does that happen with humanitarian work? Because you've seen so much pain and so much injustice that you carry it?
Yes. Mm. Oh, yes, it does. It is something that actually, and that can take me back to when I got married. I married immediately after university. I finished university in 2003, and I married immediately in 2004.
Whoa.
My attitude towards marriage, I remember the gentleman that I married, Mr. James Odong, very good man. When he got into my life, my perception of marriage was so negative. I thought, but why would I get married to suffer? For me, it was like, because from the stories I had heard, it was as if...
Oh, yes, because you're in the community listening to older
all
women.
All these women, the man has beat me, they are not allowed to do this, I am discriminated against them. I was like, so why would I allow someone to get
imagine?
Into
because
this
I wouldn't
setting?
Even have remembered that that is something you're hearing at a very, very young age.
So I remember, because I met my husband when I was much younger, I was in senior 3. He was a friend to my older sister. So he gave her a ride to come and visit. My parents, again, were very busy. So my older siblings, my sisters,
what kind
used
of
to
parenting?
Go, they're doing the parenting. Yes. So they would come and do the visitations and all that. So he gave a ride
To
my
to your
sister.
To
come to my school in Tororo Girls to visit me.
Now I get it.
So that's the first time I met him. He was like a father figure to me because my father was very busy and all that.
Yeah.
And I think the relationship started when I was now at university. That's when he told me that...
I like you.
Yes, I like you. I think they...
Were you shocked?
Of course I was because this was...
Your friend.
My father.
Father figure.
Father figure.
What are you saying?
Yes. But he was a good... good person, a very good man. He was very focused. He had really supported me through.
Right.
He paid a lot of attention to my life.
Wow.
He was there, and I wondered, who is this person? I finished university. He picked me up after my last exam. And he took me. There was a place called Ouagadougou at that time. So he took me to Ouagadougou to celebrate. I finished university, and that's when he proposed. But
what?
That's when he proposed. But you know, our time proposal was not the proposals of these days.
So what did he do?
Proposals of those days.
He just said,
like,
we're going to get married.
We are going to get married. But now we have. But that was our thing. There was nothing like flowers and all these things
down.
I see you people do. And kneel
on one knee
and roses. And
a ring. Did a ring show up?
So we had children and we got married. We are making 20 years now.
Yeah,
married.
Beautiful.
We have 4 children. Our eldest child is 20 years in university now. And the youngest is 8 years. So good story on that side.
I'm glad. You seem at peace even telling that story.
Yes, and I think for me what that tells me is that, yes, the things that happen to other people happen and they have impacts on us. They do not have to define what our stories are.
True.
And we do not have to, you know, think that all men are bad. That
there's discernment needed
to
differentiate their story from yours.
Yes, 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 of course.
Otherwise you can get lost.
Yes, exactly.
In it.
Exactly.
In the trauma.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you didn't carry other post problems into
your life. There was, that would come in
once in a while.
But you know, as people that do this work, there's a lot of support that we need, a lot of information, a lot of mentorship, a lot of encouragement, a lot of counseling, because if you're not very careful, it can impact on your own life, because you think you lose trust in systems, you lose trust
humans.
In people, in humans and everything. You know, you can still play a role. You can still support. You can support people to emerge and to get out of these situations without having yourself
to be dented by it.
Getting dented into this.
What's your next song choice?
My next song is by Tracy Chapman. I love Tracy Chapman. It's about She's Got Her Ticket. I don't know if She's Got Her Ticket. La, 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 la. I love it because it's for me, it's a story about how a girl or a woman, once she gets the ticket, which can be in form of empowerment, education, freedom, when she gets that ticket, she will fly. She just needs her ticket, and you can't stop her. Just give her the ticket. So once you give a girl, a woman, a ticket, she's got her ticket, and she's going to go. She's going to fly. So we need to just give this ticket.
I love it.
Yes.
She's got her ticket. I think she gonna use it. I think she going to fly away. No one should try and stop her. Persuade her with their power. She says that her mind is made. She gonna use it. I think she gone to fly away. No one should try and stop her. Persuade her with their power. She says that her mind is made. Why not leave? Why not go away? Hey, too much hatred. Corruption and greed. Give you life and invariably they leave you with nothing. Young girl ain't got no chances, no roots to keep her strong. She shed all pretenses that someday she'll belong. Thank you.
Desertile and Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Desert Island Disc here with me, Flavia, and my guest today just introduced me to a good song that I'm going to actually bookmark for all of us independent women.
Yes, yes, yes.
Francis, that was Tracy Chapman. She's got her ticket, and you told us why you love it, because you can't stop a woman or a girl if she's gotten the thing that she needs. Mm-hmm. To get started in life, right. That's it. Going to go on.
Yeah.
Did you go to, is it UCOBAC? Is that how, straight away? Or
yes,
you?
Okay. UCOBAC. Yes, so UCOBAC was one of the places I volunteered in when I was
much
at university.
Earlier.
Much earlier.
Oh.
When I was at university, I did a stint there as a volunteer.
Right.
And when I finished university, I requested for a placing there as an intern. Mm. So I joined UCOBAC in 2003 as an intern.
Right after uni.
Yes, but my mother, during her times of her work in political work in the Constituent Assembly, her and a group of women, Winnie Byanyima, yes. Teze Rajamwa, group of women, they had formed a number of NGOs. Forum for Women and Democracy was one of the NGOs that they formed, and I did a lot of voluntary work there. Mm. And I was among those people a lot, and those are some of the people that really inspired me to do. Those were her peers, those were her people that she did a lot of work with. And UCOBAC was one of the organizations that she was one of the founder members of that organization. So by the time I finished university, she was not actively involved in the organization, but I knew she had played a role. I had volunteered in that organization. So I requested to do internship with them. So I started as an intern in that organization. And at some point she came back to the organization on the board. She was sitting on the board as the chair of the board. And I was working there as an intern. But over time, because the work that I was doing was so fulfilling, it's exactly what I love to do. I felt, Flavia, that I had arrived. You know that feeling of, yes.
This is it. This
you
is
know,
me.
You
when
connected. You feel like night is not going, I want tomorrow to come so that I can go to work.
You
like,
had found your thing.
I found my thing, and I was so lucky. You know how we take so long to discover
find
and find
true.
It? I found it. So I went to UCOBAC. I was an intern. At that time, of course, I was doing support work. I would go to the community. Still, I continued with my community work, got to community. And at that time, it was the era of HIV and AIDS. Yes. So a
lot
of work,
outreaches.
I was doing a lot of outreaches, home-based care for people living with HIV. So it was really interesting work for me and very fulfilling work for me. And but one of the challenges I had was this feeling of, do I have to stay here? Because if I stay here, I probably will not grow, because people will always feel like she did not struggle to get here like we did. This was her mother.
Her mom
was
on the board.
Her mother was on the board.
Yes.
But then I told myself, but wait a minute. There are so many people that have these opportunities and they do not necessarily deliver because they take everything for granted. And I am different. I actually love what I'm doing. I am putting the best that I can do in this. I just need to do that.
Right.
And then everyone else will see that I'm not taking everything for granted, but I'm actually hard work and passionate about the work that I'm doing. So over time, the board itself, they would, you know, see it and they would say, there's something about this young girl.
Yes.
And, you know, I moved from being an intern to now becoming a staff as an officer.
Right.
Then from there, I continued my work and doing my things and mobilizing. And then I moved. I became a senior staff.
Wow.
And continue doing my work within the organization. And of course, I had this pressure of try something out there. I was like, but why?
If I'm here, happy.
I'm I am
happy
actually
here.
Happy, I am serving, I'm reaching, I'm seeing change that I want to see. Because for me as a person, I want to see a person moving from and going to C. I do not want to do something just for the sake. And I was actually seeing that with the work that we're doing, that with the people, with the families and the communities that we were working with, people were really transforming from one thing that we found them some kind of life they were living to something else. And I said, but this is exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
Do I have to shop? I don't want to keep running around. I'm happy with this. So I moved on to being a senior staff. And then after some time, the board decided that I should take on the leadership of the organization.
As executive director.
So all my life I have worked in, my work life I have been in Yuko Bank,
wow.
but doing different things.
Roles,
because
yeah.
at some point I was an intern, then when I was an officer, I was working on the health programs or the HIV and AIDS work. Then when I became a senior staff, I was working on human rights work, focusing on women's land rights work. Then now I'm the executive director. So it's been the same space, but really doing different things.
Roles.
And I have grown in the different areas that I have worked in.
When you rise in ranks in one job or in one organization, is there an advantage to say that, for example, you don't have to over-prepare to be the executive director, because ideally you know every nook and cranny of the organization.
That's true. And it also helps the organization. Mm. It helps the organization because sometimes it's good sometimes to have new energy, new opinions, new people to come in. But I also think there is a lot of value in having someone that has been part of the system, who understands, because as an organization from way back, this is a 30-year-old organization. Mm. It had a mission, and that's the direction that the organization is moving to. So for you to be a person that was kind of part of forming that mission, and also walking the journey towards that mission, and supporting others not to get lost and kind of divert off the mission, is very important. So I think it's an advantage that I was an insider.
I grew
within there. I've tried to ensure that the organization stays focused, and we achieve what our mission is. Of course, allowing innovation with the changing context, innovation, new ideas, and all that. All that is the skill that I need to have as a leader to make sure that there is space for that to happen, but at least we don't lose our focus and our direction as an organization. And I think it has really helped Yuko Bank to grow to who it is today, because we are currently, I would say, a big organization. We have over 35 staff that I work with.
It's ranked as an NGO.
It's an NGO.
Yes.
Doing our work at community level. We have over 12 programs that are running in different parts of the country.
In the category of health or
in different program areas, we do health, specifically on sexual and reproductive health. And we are doing this work in mainly in the refugee settlement areas in Palabek and in Lamuo. So we are doing sexual and reproductive health work, and also in other communities in the eastern part of the country. We also are very big on women's land and property rights. That's
unique.
it's important, actually, because as you know, land for us in Uganda and in many parts of the world is a key resource for survival. You're nothing without land, for housing, for food, for shelter, for everything. It rotates around land. But we also know that our cultures and customs really discriminate women against
ownership
and making decisions on land. It's really a domain of men. So really our work is around shifting those norms, those social and cultural norms that discriminate against women and girls in regards to ownership and control and decision making on land. So we do a lot of awareness raising, supporting registration, joint registration of husband and wives, because basically it's about husbands and men understanding the value that comes from your daughters or your wives being part and parcel
as owners,
co-owners.
And is that an easy conversation?
No, okay. It's not an easy conversation, because remember, these are our cultures. These are norms. This is something that we have been taught over time, that land as a resource is passed on from a male, you know, it's
the lineage,
because of our patriarchal society, it's passed on from a male lineage. So it's from father to son. So for us as girls and as daughters, as wives, we just, when you get married, you get married to a man who has land. So for you, you're there as a user. You're there as a user. But if this relationship ends at any time, either through death or divorce or separation, then you go back.
You go away.
Yeah. So that lack of certainty of security is very difficult. It's very problematic, in the sense that women are not, or girls are not, able to invest all their energy and time on this land, because you know, after all, I'm here temporarily.
It's not mine.
Yes, it's not mine. Someone else is going to bring other women. They are going to take. He's going to leave me anytime. So because you don't have that
security.
Confidence and security, you don't invest. So those are the kind of conversations we have with men.
I like
and
that.
What from what we have learned is that actually men understand these issues. Mm-hmm. For as long as you attach the value of, if my wife is a co-owner, how do I, and as my family, how do we benefit?
Mm.
Which is very obvious. And once those conversations start happening, then you see men really
understanding
and okay. really supporting their wives, bequeathing their land to their daughters, and the land becomes more productive when they work together as a family. So women's land and property rights is one of our program areas.
That's
orphans
really good.
And vulnerable children, we work with children, so supporting children in education, health, and so forth. And then finally, we also do work around climate change.
You know, the thing about men eventually understanding when you explain, someone said that sometimes the norms or the beliefs that we follow is like how someone comes to this home and says, give me my tea in this particular cup with two sugars.
Yeah.
And you say, when I drink tea, I drink it in this cup with two sugars. Yeah. Why? That's how my father did it.
Yeah.
And then the next one is asked, why do you drink from this particular cup with only two sugars?
Yeah.
My grandfather did that way. My father did it that way. And you're like, but do you know why
your
grandfather
did it? Yes, exactly.
No one ever finds out why.
That's
it. They just do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so exactly. I think that's pretty much it. Now, when they find out, oh, this is, it's okay for us to share.
Yeah,
maybe back in the day was different. Maybe it warranted that.
Exactly.
But today it doesn't.
Yes, it's just for people to appreciate that things have changed.
Yes.
Maybe it worked then. Maybe it was perfect then.
Or it didn't work.
Maybe it didn't work then.
Yes, or it
but
didn't
let's
work.
Talk about reality today. Yes. When you look at the economy, we have children to send to school, we have food to, we have climate change issues, we have all these challenges that we have to deal with. Business cannot be as usual. We need to get back on the drawing table and just think through some of the ways of life that we have.
Absolutely.
And transform those that are harmful, because these are human beings. Because I was born a woman or a girl does not make me a lesser human being than you. So just looking at your wife and your daughter as equal human beings and giving them opportunities and resources and services at the same footing that you'd give to your sons
is
really the conversations that we have in our community.
Absolutely. What's your next song choice? Your fourth?
My fourth song is Bazira.
Bachala Bazira.
Bachala Bazira. By, is it Jamal?
Yes.
I love that song, of course.
Yeah,
it's obvious.
After all you've told us, of course.
Yes, it's obvious. Yes, so Bazira is my song.
All right.
Yep.
Desert Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
It's Desert Island Discs in our final slot for this conversation. I think you've sort of redefined it for people who are listening, who, because a lot of my guests are people who've risen through ranks in different organizations, in different places, in different, and sometimes they're people who are like you. Mm. They would like to grow in the same place because they found their niche, they found their interest, they found their passion, and they can expand it and excel there. Mm. But they're afraid because everyone else looks different.
Right.
And now you're an example too. It's okay, by the way.
Yeah.
Once you find your thing, grow around it.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to move from here because everyone is moving to places.
That's true.
What makes you a great leader?
What makes
now
me a great
over
leader?
The years, because you wanted to do it.
Yes.
But you have actually risen through ranks as a leader in different ways.
In a different way.
What do you believe makes you a good leader?
I think for me, I have I don't know. I think my experience, I've had very great mentorship. From my parents, from the peers of my parents, like I mentioned, my mother's peers, the Winnie Byanyimas, Tezi Rajamwa, those were the people, those are her people, those are her friends, and those were the people I was around growing up.
Yeah.
So they kind of shaped, and those were great leaders of.
Are still great
leaders, but you know, they really poured something into me that I think I appreciate to today.
Right.
And of course, there are some others today that I really admire. There is a lady called Jackie Asimwe, I admire her so much. Yeah. There's the number of young emerging leaders that we have today that really still continue to power in me, and I'm very open-minded to be to learn and to become a better leader. So I don't think I'm there. I'm still on the learning journey.
Okay.
Yes, but I think for me, because I have a team that I lead, and also the communities, volunteers, and all these people that we work with, and being a leader for them, first and foremost for me, the issue that I think about is investing in myself as a leader. Trying to learn every single day on how I can be a better leader is very important to me, and I do it intentionally. If there is a mentorship program, Flavia, I'm there. And someone, there's a time Jackie has a mentorship program, and I applied, and she called me and she was like, but Frances, really?
What are you still learning?
I told her, no, Jackie, I still need to learn. I still need to learn. There's always something out there, something new for us as leaders to learn.
Absolutely.
So that we can, you know, be better. We can, you know, support others to also be like me. So they don't have to keep running from you, come back. Let them stay and build the vision, because I don't have to stay there
alone.
There's someone else that should come. So for me, that is one. Mm. The other issue is the people. For me, a team. Mm. I work with a team. Mm. And I always think about, how do I make these people to be on my side so that we work together as a team? So I try to open up to them. If you talk to the people that I work with, I try as much as possible not to create that gap between I am the leader, you are down here. No, I really try to create a space where we are peers, we are colleagues. Let's talk, let's support each other. We're on this journey together.
Yeah.
And in the process, I get the opportunity to mentor, to support, to encourage, to heal, to hear. So I feel that people, you know, building a team of people that are healthy in all spheres, mentally, emotionally, you know, health-wise, you know, so that then you have a healthy team that can support you to be able to have a healthy organization.
Yes.
So for me, people is very important, and I try to create very personal relationships with the people that I work with so that they can understand me and I can understand them, and we can support each other along this journey. And then finally, Flavia, for me, it's systems. I think as a leader, if you're working without systems, you're just going to get lost. You will just be a leader that will do something and you wonder, but how did I get here? So for me, I invest so much in systems. And by systems, I'm talking about issues to do with, for example, governance systems. Am I alone in this leadership journey? Do I have a team of leaders? Do I have a governance system that is supporting?
The buck doesn't stop on you.
Exactly.
There's accountability at different stages and levels.
So systems, finance and accountability. Mm-hmm. There are people that are entrusting us with these resources. Are we accounting to them? Are we accountable? Are we transparent? So such systems, communication, are we talking to people about the work that we are doing? Are the systems working? So for me, investing in having very strong institutional systems is very critical, and that has really helped me to lead this organization to what it is.
You talked about the executive director of Oxfam, Winnie Byanyima.
Yes.
Who is, I mean, most young and older women in this country absolutely know that name.
Yes.
She's a force to be reckoned with. But one, I think a couple of years back, she tried to show the inequality in a woman running an organization and a man at the same position, mm-hmm. and said, we are running the race, but behind a woman, there's sort of like a rope behind her pulling back. And sometimes the rope looks like a partner that you're supporting. Sometimes it looks like the education you're going to have. Sometimes it looks like the children that you're nurturing. Mm. Sometimes it looks like, you know, things like menses, for example, because your body can't handle certain things. Whereas a man is just running the race.
And
she said, you will never talk to me about equality because It's just not. Do you feel? And I'm actually asking this not in a woo woo feel bad for us.
Yeah,
I'm asking it in a different way. Do you believe that there is an added advantage having a woman leader, especially because you're executive director? That's a top position.
Yeah.
And sometimes people look at women as emotions,
yes.
or they're not going to have time. But over time, have you seen value, especially because you've been around mom?
Yeah.
And mom has been around other great women.
Yeah.
And they've formed what women development and leadership looks like in this country. Have you seen the value in a woman taking up those positions?
Yeah. I'm glad you bring that up. And Winnie really, Winnie is my mother as well, because I've worked with her. She's really my other mother. Yeah. And I've learned a lot from her. And what she says is so spot on. If you look at we as leaders, women as leaders, what we have to do compared to our male counterparts in the same level of leadership, the baggage that we have for us, the care work itself, because we're talking about these things of, you know, you're an empowered woman.
Yeah.
You should not be doing. No, that's not that. That's
it's not as easy.
It's not as
everyone.
Easy. You take look after your children. So there's all this burden of care, but also the confidence that people have in you. Like, you have to prove yourself extra hard for people to say, actually,
well done,
Flavia. By the way, can actually, but you have to put in. But for a man, somehow it comes naturally. Come on,
you're
a man, you can do this. Mm. But for you have to go that extra mile to prove to everyone that actually, despite everything around, all these circumstances that make it difficult for me, I can actually serve. Probably even better than if given this space and opportunity.
Yes.
So really, it becomes very difficult. But what I have noticed, and from experience, it is women are very good leaders. Mm. And I think it's a natural thing that comes for us as women. Mm. And sometimes I feel really, I don't like it when they say women are very emotional. There is nothing wrong about being emotional. Mm. It's actually very good that we are emotional. And it makes us very good leaders because it makes us emotionally intelligent.
Mm.
We are able to understand people.
Yes.
We can have, you know, we can have that more emotional intelligence that is very critical in leadership because we are gifted naturally as emotional beings.
Yes.
So it is very important for us to be proud about our emotional self.
One of the biggest strengths in leadership is empathy.
It's empathy,
and you can't have empathy without
emotions. So I think it's very important. I think what we need to do as women is not to stay there for so long. Mm-hmm. It is okay to be emotional. It's to be emotional and to use that intelligence, emotional intelligence, that you can have empathy, you can connect with people, you can support and mentor and grow and so forth. But you shouldn't stay there for so long. Like, let that not be your only strength.
Right.
We have the potential to be more than that.
So much more.
We can be professional. We can be more than that. Yeah. So we need to hang on to being emotional. It's very important. It's good. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we need to also understand that we can be very intelligent people. We can be professional people. We can make decisions. We can. There's a lot more
it's
that we can
not
do.
All.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I think it's actually better to have a women leader, mm-hmm. because we bring in the emotional intelligence, but we also bring in the other kind of intelligence that everyone thinks is the only way that things should move. Where you're professional, you're rational, you're making rational decisions. Yeah. You're logical, but women can be both. Mm-hmm. We can have emotional intelligence and also be rational at the same time, be decision makers, be critical thinkers, and move things despite all the challenges. And I think all the challenges that women face actually make a woman leader even stronger, because actually it makes us natural multitaskers.
That's true.
You can run home, you can run friendships, you can run relationships, you can run an institution. I mean,
you can't imagine putting it any other way.
I think it's just amazing.
You're like, of course,
this
is how life
is. I think amongst the things God made, God making a woman is one of the best things that he made. I mean, how can we be that we can do all this stuff and we don't break down? So I think it's just amazing.
Before we lose all the men thinking, oh, come on.
We love them so much. We do. We can't do it without them.
Thank you, Frances Berengiodon, for sharing your story.
Yeah.
And this will probably be the start of us following up UKOBAC. UKOBAC is a Uganda community-based association for women and children welfare. And we're going to look out for all the wonderful work that you are doing. But as we part from the show, what's your final song choice?
Okay, my final song is No Ordinary Love. Mm-hmm. Tell me you know that one, Flavia. No?
By whom?
Okay, you're a young person. For us, we are.
You'd be surprised. Which artist is this?
Is it Sed? Sed?
Or Sade? Sade? Yes.
Sade, yes. No Ordinary Love.
Yes, I do.
I love that song. And for me, I think that as a person, I'm a kind of person that doesn't give ordinary love. If I choose that I love you, I will love you. I'll not give you ordinary love. I'll give you the love that you deserve. It's not ordinary love. It's wholesome. So either I love you as a mother, I love you as a lover, I love you as a wife, whatever, I will give you.
It explains why you're in the community.
Yes,
because you couldn't keep this to yourself.
I don't give them ordinary love. I give them wholesome, real love, and it drives the passion in me.
It was good to meet you. It's good to know you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you, Flavia, for having me.
Right, Sade with No Ordinary Love. We'll be wrapping Frances Berengiodon's story. Have a good night.
Somebody
Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.